Case today, and that's the Comer case with Mr. Bledsoe and Mr. Jeffrey. And whenever you're ready, Mr. Bledsoe.
Judge, if I may reserve 5 minutes.
Certainly. Good morning. You had a long drive, didn't you?
A wee bit of one. Left this morning at 4, so.
Did you drive this morning?
I did. I've got to be in Richmond tomorrow for a case, so.
I see.
Yeah. Justin through.
I'm sorry, you reserved 5 minutes, is that correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you. You may proceed.
May please the court. I represented a young lady in Lee County, Virginia, Crystal Ann Comer, who was charged with violating Section 18.2-371B1, the child endangerment statute. The facts of the case was that she was out with a date night with her boyfriend.
At Rooster's, was it?
At Rooster's Pub, downtown Pennington Gap, and had a...
Let me interrupt you because
yes.
You're familiar with the facts. Does this case boil down to... what I think is probably a matter of first impression is simply that whether or not intoxication standing alone equates to criminal negligence.
Yes, Your Honor. I think so.
And it seems to me Judge McAlee clearly seemed to find that was the case. That was
yes, and she's a fine judge. I just disagreed with that opinion.
I'm sure you
judge.
Did. Why wouldn't it be? I mean, certainly, I think we'd all agree we don't want intoxicated parents strapping their young children into the backs of vehicles. But, I mean, every case I could find involves circumstances other than intoxication, speed, weaving, that sort of thing. We don't have any of that here.
And that's the difficulty that I had, and I try to argue with the court. She had a .1 to .10. There's no drugs involved, and a lot of the cases involve a combination of alcohol and drug. And, of course, I do a lot of civil practice, and, of course, when you get the punitive damages area, you have that 0.15 threshold. So how do you define gross, wanton, culpable act in this case? That's the difficulty I have, and it's really not spelled out. The case laws indicates higher alcohol content. In this case, from the... A trooper said she had some impairment with respect to the field sobriety test, and even Dr. Coleman indicated that she had some, but it wasn't severe. So that's difficult to either have. I mean, if you're out, and she was called to pick up her child because of the babysitter, and it wasn't her intent to have to leave that early. But she did have a .1 to .11. Is that sufficient? I would submit that it shouldn't be.
I mean, this is actually a case where you'd have a 50-50 chance of winning if she were only charged with driving while intoxicated as opposed to driving with a BAC in excess of .08.
Yes. And, you know, there was, and we didn't contest, I mean, she had a .11. We pled guilty to that right up front.
She had a .09 extrapolated back.
Yes, Your Honor.
Which, of course, our case law says that the BAC at time of testing is the BAC at time of driving. So.
Yeah. And the preliminary breath test is a .97, so it's real close there. But, you know, this is just an unfortunate accident that's going around the curved road.
There's no damage to the
car. No, there's a bump. There's a little smudge, and the trooper rubbed it off with his finger, and there was no accident report filed. So you have a newly asphalted road, curvy area. The lady in front slowed down quickly because she was aware that there was a drop-off in this construction area. And when she applied to brakes, she struck the car in front of her. All right. Barely bumped it. And it just seems to me that this is a rather harsh outcome for the facts in this case. And,
well, if we were to agree with the circuit court in this case, basically the crime would occur the moment you put your kids in the car and get behind the wheel. That's when you completed the crime of endangering the children.
Under that statute, yes. Regardless, I mean, of course, with the child in the car, there's a mandatory minimum under that charge. But absolutely, that's the analysis it comes down to.
Actually, if we accept this, the crime is committed when you get in your car in your own driveway and turn the radio on.
That's true.
No.
With your kids in the back seat.
Yes. So, yeah, and again, I could not find any case law that was really on point. Everything that I saw, there was either a combination of drugs and alcohol, and the mannerisms were much more pronounced than what was testified in this case.
Well, we do. There is some dicta in one of our prior cases that would suggest that that's enough. But again, it's dicta; it's not binding. But I couldn't find any. Certainly, the Supreme Court of Virginia has relied upon a totality of the circumstances test.
Yes.
Consistently.
Yes, sir.
The key is the definition of criminal negligence.
Yes.
And whether this rises to that level of willful, wanton, culpable criminal act. And I mean, that language is spelled out in quite a few cases.
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, what do you say that, obviously, we've got some issues going around here, mm-hmm. but in reference to willful, the fact that she knew that she shouldn't be driving, you know, and wouldn't have been but for the incident with
yes,
the babysitter. And she knew when she got the call at Rooster's, so she tried to eat some, she testified that she tried to eat some french fries and,
yes,
you know. So, and yet she still went, she still drove. Isn't that willful?
It does go to the gross, wanting the couple back. I guess that's where I'm having the problem at. I guess any time you take action that's willful, and may have been excused, may have not have been, but does it rise to that level of being gross, wanting a couple back? That's my concern with the judge.
That's what we're struggling with, Mr. Bledsoe. we're trying to see it from both sides.
It certainly may be, it may be in the abstract, you mm-hmm. could get to, for example, the average person dies, I think, at 0.5 BAC. If you were to get into a motor vehicle at 0.45 or something, of course, typically then you'd have weaving all over the road and,
yes, right.
and that sort of thing. But, I mean, so your impairment is being obviously manifested other than just through a blood alcohol analysis.
Yes.
But I couldn't find a single case that stands for the proposition that excess drinking standing alone without any other circumstances mm-hmm. whatever would equate to gross, wanton, culpable conduct that represents a reckless indifference to the welfare of others.
Well, she did have an accident, didn't she?
She did. The car in front of her stopped. She stopped. It was a rainy, slippery road, and no damage.
But had the accident been severe and someone injured, I think we'd have a very different proposition, wouldn't we?
I think so. And I guess I'll reserve the rest of mine, unless there's other questions.
No, that's a pretty straightforward issue.
No, thank you, Mr. Bledsoe.
Good morning. May it please the court.
Good morning, Mr. Gabriel.
Do you agree that this is a question of whether driving with a BAC of 0.08 or above is per se gross, wanton, culpable negligence?
No, I don't. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut
if
you off, Justice
Petty.
With the child in the car. I think that's one way that you could couch it, and I think Judge Humphreys was the one who said that. I don't know if we have any case law in the child neglect context.
But is that the issue here, whether or not merely being intoxicated establishes that gross, wanton, culpable negligence required for conviction on the child abuse statute?
I don't think it is, Judge Petty. I think it's an issue that you could address, but I would take issue with the comments that this was, that the trial judge treated this as an intoxication-only case. I mean, based on her comments and based on the totality of the evidence in front of her, which, as the court knows, under Bolden, you have to look at everything, whether she commented on it or not.
Here's the problem I have. 18.2-51.4 is maiming while driving while intoxicated. And there's two elements to that offense. The person is driving while intoxicated and does so in a manner so gross, wanton, and culpable as to show reckless disregard for human life.
Correct.
So if you look at that statute, it seems pretty clear to me that the General Assembly did not intend that a person simply being over that .08 limit is driving in a manner gross, wanton, and culpable, per se.
First, to answer your question, I think that's fair, and actually, the Wright case, which I think Judge Humphreys actually wrote, I think there's some discussion in Wright where, in his opinion, he actually says essentially what you just said, which is that...
he's always repeating what I said.
which is that the mere intoxication alone has never been held to be enough. And in fact, you could write that statute. I mean, Mr.
Well, in fact, the General Assembly amended, some years ago, amended the manslaughter statute, to include if you drive with a BAC over the legal limit and kill someone, it equates to involuntary manslaughter. That amendment would have been totally unnecessary if the General Assembly already assumed that having a BAC over the legal limit equated to criminal negligence, because that's what involuntary manslaughter was in the first place.
Correct. I don't think it's in the statute. I don't think you find that in this court's case law that it's per se.
But here the trial court stated, quote, she gave a long explanation, but it seems to me the operative or the bottom line here was when she said that, quote, driving under the influence of alcohol with a child in the automobile subjects the child to a substantial risk of serious injury. And that's a JA 85 and repeated at 106. So, substantial risk of serious injury, that's, I think, as close as the trial court got to concluding that it equated to gross, wanton, the definition of criminal negligence. Would you agree?
I think she said that, and I will say before I go too far, I've got notes on the appendix, and unfortunately I don't have it with me for some reason this morning, but I know she made comments similar to that, but I think, I mean, my notes indicate, I mean, she talked about the road conditions, and if you remember her testimony, I believe this is page 51 of the joint appendix, she indicated...
Let me help you, it's a page 86. She says, quote, considering the evidence as a whole, it is a dark, wet, curvy road, there was an accident, the defendant's ability to operate a motor vehicle safely was impaired by alcohol. Her blood alcohol content at the time of the accident was 0.10 to 0.11, well over the presumption of intoxication set forth by the laws of the Commonwealth. Driving under the influence carries an inherent dangers with it, and there was, in fact, an accident. I understand it was slight, but nonetheless, there was an accident. An accident of the type that one would expect to be occasioned because of one's abilities to respond to situations and safely operate a motor vehicle that had been impaired through the use of alcohol. And again, the inherent dangers in such a situation were borne out by what occurred in this case. So it seems to me the factors she considered, would you agree, are dark and stormy night, I guess, to coin a phrase, curvy road being paved, and the fact that there was an accident, although it was a very slight accident. Is that, along with the intoxication, would you agree that's it?
I think that's it, and I think you have to consider that in the context of the defendant's own admission that she was maintaining a car length or car length and a quarter of following distance, which, and again, I cited the statute about following distances and stopping distances to the court. So, I mean, she had evidence, and of course, that sort of flows from the toxicologist's testimony, not to mention common sense, that she was exercising poor judgment by following closely. She was entering into an area where the road conditions were bad. So again, I think there is more than intoxication. I mean, the intoxication certainly is an overarching issue here.
That is negligence, surely. But are those facts, do they rise to that gross, wanton, culpable criminal negligence? Following too close and being on a dark, rainy road?
You still have to consider the intoxication as it relates to, as it relates to judgment about proper following distances, judgment about your own ability to navigate effectively. So the intoxication plays a role, but I still take some issue with the fact that it's a per se finding, because I think you have to factor in everything. And of course, I mean, the judge talked about other things, about her recognizing the risk that she was going to stay for several hours and so forth. But I don't think you can disregard well, I guess what you're getting at is, if any of us have a child in the car when we're and we have a rear-end collision, is that gross negligence? Clearly, the answer to that is no.
Well, what about the 18-year-old driving his 17-year-old girlfriend home from the prom and gets pulled over for drunk driving? Is he now going to be guilty of a felony?
Without additional evidence, no. But here again, you've got significant evidence, not just of the road conditions. And I'd point you. I mean, the judge talked a lot about these conditions. You've got the hump, you've got the wet conditions.
But in the context of the statute, of this particular statute,
right,
we're talking about an act or omission.
Correct.
Okay. Now here, I don't think we're talking about an omission. We're talking about an act.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And the act would have to be, it seems to me, the consumption of the alcohol.
Except that I think that we consider acts in toto. But clearly, the DUI is the most significant piece of it, but I don't think it's the only piece. I guess that's where I'm having a disconnect on this one.
But the rest of the phrase, of course, is act or omission so gross, wanton, or culpable as to show a reckless disregard for human life. That's the point Judge Petty is trying to make. Reckless disregard for human life, and there's probably 50 cases that talk about how high a standard that is. How ordinary negligence is way down here, and criminal negligence is way up here. And so we're trying to, I guess, parse this in terms of how much is a when you see it standard kind of thing, or can we articulate if it's per se criminal negligence to overindulge in alcohol, that makes it simple in one sense. There may be some unintended consequences that Judge Petty just pointed out with his 18-year-old and 17-year-old in the car committing the felony, but that's at least it's a simple test. But, and we can all agree that if you're driving 100 miles an hour down a crowded sidewalk with pedestrians flying over your hood, that's probably criminal negligence because you don't care what happens to any of those people.
Right. Or with a situation like Wood, where clearly intoxication level is nothing like Wood.
Well, in Wood, of course, there was other conduct as well, leaning over, getting the cigarette. Right. Trying to drive along where you're getting your cigarette lit by your boyfriend is.
And then the court in Wood did say, here, intoxication alone clearly could be enough. And then
I have a little bit of problem with, because they cited the Supreme Court's case in Stevens for that proposition as if that was a quote. And I looked at Stevens, and Stevens doesn't say that. So, I have a little bit of an issue with my friend Judge Frank, who wrote that opinion about quoting quoting language that's not in the source material. But
I probably poked at that hard some time ago, but not when I was writing this brief. I guess what I would maybe leave you with is this, and one would follow up on what you said, Judge Humphreys. Not only is it when is it I know it when I see it, but also where is that divide between the trial judge as the definer of fact and the appellate court when you're going to say it's plainly wrong? And obviously the definitions of this criminal recklessness, there's been various iterations, and I don't mean to suggest that this was at the level of Barrett necessarily, but that language has surfaced that it is a disaster just waiting to happen. What we know happened here is this woman, all the things the trial judge talked about, she apparently knew that it was a good idea to stay put longer. She was preempted by certain situations. She goes out on that road. We know by her statement, her own testimony is car length distance. And if you look at my brief as far as the statute, I always question when I can pull things off the internet, but I'd ask you to use your common sense. I think
the FCC website was it.
But just common sense, the low end of the stopping distance is perfect conditions, perfect driver input as far as judgment. I think the low end is 140 feet or so, which is almost from the goal line to midfield
on. We can all agree driving too fast for conditions is negligent.
Is
following too closely is
fine
as
that on the interstate.
Well, Mr. Jeffrey, don't we also have, which we many times don't have, we've got those three sobriety tests, those field sobriety tests, and they show. And we know what our alcohol content was because we got the toxicology report, but they show how her inability to perform those adequately,
correct,
which gave the judge and the officer the, you know, clear indication that she, number one, shouldn't have been driving. You know, some people can drive at .097 and not show that kind of impairment. That clearly she was showing some significant impairment based upon those three sobriety tests.
We do have that, and that is significant. And you know, as the court points out, some people are better at .10 than others. I had occasion to do a ride along a couple of years ago, and one of the other officers arrested somebody who was .15, and I think he probably walked better than I walked into the courtroom this morning. I mean, some people just, that's where they are. I'll point you to the Barrett definition, and I think you're probably right, Judge Humphreys. To some extent, it is a, I know it when I see it, and where is that great divide between the trial court and the appellate court?
It seems to be Beck, which is the Supreme Court case from 1975, is still good law, and it's a case closely on point with what we have here. And what the Supreme Court said in Beck is the degree of intoxication is a circumstance relevant to a determination of whether of the question of whether, in light of all other circumstances, the act of driving an automobile was such an improper performance of a lawful act as to constitute negligence so gross and culpable as to indicate a callous disregard of human life.
Right. And what I would submit happened here in toto, you've got not just the intoxication and the field test that Judge Chafin talked about a moment ago. You've got an actual accident, and again, the statute, as the court knows, does not require actual injury. And I think if you plug these facts, again, remember, slick road, no markings on the road. I think the defendant actually testified to that. The bad conditions. We've got the rear end collision with a 22-month-old in the back of the car. Look. In my mind, there but for the grace of God, you've got a head-on collision with a car coming in the other direction. Her judgment was terrible, her following distance,
Wasn't the amount of damage almost de minimis?
Fortunately, yes, it was. But
well, I mean, that's so, even if she was following too close, she couldn't have been following too close because she didn't do much damage.
I guess fortunately
she was driving well under the speed limit. You know, the conditions, whether she was driving too fast for conditions, I guess is a subjective determination.
Right.
I might not have been driving that fast under those conditions, but I think the point is that Judge Petty and I are trying to get to is, can we craft an opinion in this case, one way or the other, that provides guidance that would... For example, in the Snow case, which I wrote some years ago, it was a situation where we had children in the back of a vehicle driven by an uncle, as I recall, at high speed in a high speed chase.
I think it was over 100 miles an hour at one point.
And we said that was conduct so gross, he simply didn't care about the welfare of the children. He was trying to evade the police, and driving at over 100 miles an hour and weaving in and out of traffic was the conduct that we found satisfied that statute. But that isn't what we have here.
Quite, you don't have that. You don't have wood.
It seems to me, so.
You don't have that. You don't have wood.
It seems to me that the General Assembly recognized that driving intoxicated with a child in the car is inherently dangerous. But in doing so, they put in a mandatory punishment
on the DUI statute, which actually,
I mean, so they didn't even create another offense. They just said there's a mandatory minimum in that instance. So it appears the General Assembly is not suggesting that mere intoxication with a minor in the car constitutes another offense.
I think between the stat, and I'm sorry, I'm over my time. Would you like me to answer? I'm not sure. It was probably rhetorical.
I'd like to answer his question.
Please, please answer.
Yeah. I think between the compare and contrast you can do with the statutes, and then the language in Judge Humphrey's opinion in Wright, which in theory may be dicta, but obviously it's something the court can look to. I'd be hard-pressed to tell you it's per se, and I come back full circle to saying that I don't think this is an intoxication-only case for all the reasons we've talked about on brief, and not only the reasons the trial judge talked about, but the totality of the evidence that was before her, which under Bolden you can consider. If the court has further questions, I'll try to address those.
Thank you, Mr. Jeffrey. Mr. Bledsoe.
Your Honor, I just wanted to point out with respect to the field sobriety test and Dr. Coleman's testimony that it showed signs that there was some impairment. It wasn't to that much of a degree. I just wanted to point that out to the court to look at that. And basically, I'm just not smart enough to drag this out too much longer.
We understand the issues. Thank you.
We're smart enough to appreciate it.
Thank you, sir.
We definitely do. Thank you, Mr. Bledsoe. We'll come down and greet counsel.